Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And this week on the couch, we have one of my really good friends, and a pretty good friend for you too, Miss Courtney, our friend Matt Richardson. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me here.
Happy Monday. Yeah. We are recording here on this last Monday of the month of July.
That's true.
Can you believe that July has come and gone almost?
I can't believe that the summer has come and gone.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind.
Well, your kids potentially start school back like in 2 weeks
from today.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, yeah, that's Aubrey, insane. My daughter Aubrey starts on August 15th.
Yeah,
and we're gonna be gone for a week visiting my mother, and it's like, oh my gosh, school starts.
Yeah, that it's kind of a fun way to jump in. You used to teach in the school district in the Raytown school district.
Yep.
What's that like to sort of not have to like go back to school? You know, sort of.
There are so many pros to being an educator, just the connection with kids and all that stuff, but to not have to gear up for the grind is really nice.
Yeah, I bet.
And just the dreading this Sunday every weekend, and oh my gosh, I've got all this grading and all these things to do. Just, it's very freeing to not have to worry about that anymore. I miss
the kids, you sort of invested in yourself sort of in this last year or so, which we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah, sure.
First question really is always, how the hell did you get to the couch today? From your perspective, how the hell did you get here today?
Oh, well, I blame Kara Hampton.
Okay.
Sorry, Kara.
Thank you, Little Women.
She'll claim it. Yep.
Yep.
In that I hadn't done a show since high school. And I graduated from high school in 2002, so that was my one and only high school performance, because I played basketball all through high school. I quit my senior year, and I did the musical. And then I didn't do any theater again. Did music all through college, obviously, but I didn't do any theater again until I was working at Raytown. Kara Hampton was the theater teacher at Raytown High School, and said...
She replaced Ron Meyer, correct?
She was two after Ron
she
Meyer.
Was two after
yeah,
Ron
there was
okay.
there was one interim between okay. between the two of them for a couple of years,
awesome.
maybe five years, and then Kara took over, and she had invited me to vocal direct or to vocal coach some of the shows with them, just working with kids one on one and giving some voice lessons and helping them get through some of the difficulties of the shows, and one of the years she asked me to help was with Little Women at the school, and then it came around that Okta was going to be doing Little Women. In the spring of 2014, she said, "Matt, you have to come audition with me. Like, I want to be in a show with you. Just come audition. It would be so much fun if I was Joe and you were Bear, and it'd just be what an amazing experience." And so I went and auditioned. She was cast as Joe. I was not cast as Professor Bear.
No.
Graham was cast as Professor Bear, and he was fantastic. I was cast as John Brooke.
Which is a vocally beautiful song for you.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, Julie Ewing was the director, and she made all the right casting choices. And obviously, my current wife was cast as Meg. She was not my wife at the time. Mm-hmm. And we met through that show, and we've been married for 5 years with children. And it's crazy how life changes because of one decision to audition for Little Women, Kara Hampton.
And your Little Women at Raytown is very interesting to us because you had our famous mantle fireplace on that stage that maybe had some Greek gay wrestling drawn all over. Do you remember that?
Yes,
it was our mantle that we had from the Heartland, and there was like Greek wrestlers. It always just reminds me of that scene from The Birdcage, when they're like, are these boys? So I always remember, because Zach Thoman at that time was working there, and he was a direct connection with us, and so took our mantle there. And I just remember, like, after the show had opened, I remember talking to Zach and being like, do you remember what the hell was painted on that? And he was like, no. And so then he went and looked, and he was like, oh, shit.
He had, like,
I know, but no one noticed it, because it was beautiful and, like, funny. Anyway, so I always have a funny connection with your Raytown version of that show.
It was a cute show. But from that, so obviously I met my wife, which was an unbelievable life-altering experience, but I got the bug, and I hadn't done theater. I loved it when I did it in high school, but I just didn't pursue it in college at all. It was just music was my main focus, and history, my history major and teaching and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't know anything about theater in the community at all. I didn't know when auditions were. I didn't know what companies there were. Octa was the only thing I'd ever done. I'd never been to a park show, uh-huh. anything. Chip Buckner was in that cast with us, and he said, "You need to audition for Theater in the Park. I'm on the board there. You need to come out and audition." I was like, "I don't know what that is, but
sure,
maybe."
Okay.
So I went back and forth about it. I didn't know whether or not I was going to. Well, one of our final performances of Little Women, Kevin Bogan was in the audience, and through connections said, "You need to come and be my Pirate King for Pirates of Penzance at Theater in the Park this summer. I need you to come audition for me immediately." Mm-hmm. And I was like, sure, I'll come audition for you. And one thing led to another. And
I remember sitting in a chapel at Church of the Rise.
I remember that. Yeah, that little side audition.
We were in the back row. It was me and it was me and Bogan and then maybe Kip because he was the choreographer for that. Mm-hmm. And we were all sitting in the back row and we were like, oh my God, we have a fucking like pirate king. And he's right there.
Yeah. And it was just such a whirlwind because I went from not doing anything and not knowing anything or anybody, and then somebody wanted me, you know, and it was really cool to just have done that one show, and all of a sudden I'm thrust into this whole world, and you know, and it was through Pirates of Penzance, obviously, that I met you as assistant director for that show, and I have not stopped since, and it's...
I say you fell into a pit, and then ever since then, you've been in an alternate world.
Yeah, a literal and figurative pit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
I think you
fun.
Came out from that pit a different human in some way. Yeah. You know, just because that was insane to hear Matt Richardson fall into an orchestra pit.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It was painful.
It was.
Yeah, there were a few moments in the aftermath of that where I didn't know if I was going to be able to do the show.
Right.
I was a little worried. That hospital ride was awful.
That's an intense pit.
Yeah, it was a lot of comedy.
I'm just really glad that a tuba player wasn't in there yet.
Oh, yeah.
Because that...
It probably would have hurt less, honestly. I would have hit a couple instruments on the way down. But no, that was scary.
Have you done a park show since?
Not on stage, no.
Yeah.
I would love to. It hasn't ever worked out. You know, I've started music directing the Culture House every summer with our big Broadway series show. And I was music director with you and Kevin for Crazy for You. And that was a season that I would have enjoyed auditioning for too, but to get the chance to work with Kevin, to be asked by Kevin to music direct his shows is such an incredible honor.
And you did a great
job. Thank you.
Shit.
I just have so much respect for him as a local theater god, I guess. You know, he's a part of every show.
Yes.
For him to pass, you know, the reins of music director to me for that show was a huge honor that I could not turn down.
Then he asked you to do Grand Hotel.
And then we did Grand Hotel. And I feel like we make a pretty good team. I like working with Kevin a lot. We just, it's great. Every director has their strengths, you know, and what's so wonderful about Kevin is his vision is extraordinary. He's got a very specific vision for the show, but he always has the music in mind because he's a music director, you know, so there's never anything where he is asking me to make profound changes to the score to accommodate his vision. It's, I know the music does this here because I've looked at it and I understand it. So here you go. And so it's just great to work with him, and we brainstorm things together musically. We bounce ideas off each other. It's just,
and I'm sure that's nice for him to have another brain that can understand music the same way you do as well. Cause you're also part of an acapella group.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you are busy. You guys just had a competition quite recently, right?
Yeah. So my group is called Central Standard. I've been singing with them for about 10 years. And we, over the last 6 or 7 years or so, have started having a fair amount of success with our group. We changed directors a few years back, and he's just absolutely brilliant, and I consider him to be a mentor of mine as well. His name is Rob Mance. The chorus, we finished fourth in the world at this most recent competition in July in Salt Lake City. We finished as high as second in 2016, but the last four competitions we've gone to, we've finished in the top four in the world in each of those.
Awesome.
It's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun.
It is. How many years have you been involved in that?
10 years.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah.
And you really have seen it grow over those 10 years?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We were good when we started. My first year in the group, we won our district championship. The world is divided into districts, and you know, some countries have their own entire, you know, barbershop harmony society organization, and then the United States itself is divided into a variety of districts. So we won the district championship my first year, and in the group, and at international we finished like 17th out of 800 plus courses in the world. So we were really happy with that, you know. And then ever since Rob has taken over, it's just, we went 14th, 9th, 9th, 3rd. It was just crazy. And then 2nd, and then 3rd again, and now 4th. And the level of competition in each of those contests is just insane. So to be considered among some of the best in the world is really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, you're a fucking genius, man. I do lump you in, you know, with... And it's a pretty big lump, what I'm about to say, but, like, those people who are just constantly working on something. Like, there's a good amount of people that I feel are definitely in our general circle that you could almost ask at any given moment, what are you working on and what are you about to work on? And they've got two or three things. You know, you sort of already know probably what you're doing a year from now. In some capacity.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, Courtney and I talk about a lot, that our, I open up a calendar every day here that shows that 2020 is already booked, you know, both personally and at the asylum. So so we are talking in some regards about October of 2021, and we haven't even hit 2019, you know, October of 2019 yet.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it's really exciting, but there is just, I feel that same way about you, I feel that same way about Bogan, you know, and a lot of people.
To this amazing arts community that we have.
It does, and it's just really cool. I'm really glad that there's also enough for a world for you and Bogan to sort of exist in the same environment.
And work together.
You know, but, I mean, because we have music directors in this town that are extraordinary. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a good circle of people who are also working all the time or could get work. And so to figure out that there's still a space and a theater and an environment for all of these people to play is really good.
Yeah. It's amazing.
And I think it helps not, like, cause friction amongst similar jobs and, you know, because it's not you and Bogan being like, there's only one fucking theater to work for.
Yeah.
And you keep getting it or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so.
No, we all.
I love that.
We all love each other. We talk to each other. We share orchestra members. We share ideas. We talk about everything. All of us, we collaborate. It's just it's a beautiful community.
Yes. So then you started working a few years ago for the Raytown School District. You said that.
Yeah. I started there in August of 2009.
And what brought you there?
I went to Northwest Missouri State University, and I sang with a lot of folks there, and one of them was in a quartet with me. It was the first year that I had been interested in Central Standard right after I graduated from grad school. I was looking for a teaching job. I'd been a finalist in, you know, Lee Summit and Platte County and St. Joe, and just struck out over and over and over again. I was teaching actually social studies, not music, and
because you're also a history buff, as you said, right?
Yeah. I got my master's degrees in history and social studies education, and it's my undergrad, and I just couldn't land a job, and there were no openings in Kansas City, and so I kind of just struck out, and I was working at Dick's Sporting Goods in the golf section. And then,
you also play golf as well?
Yeah, I play golf. And I ended up coaching golf at Raytown for a number of years.
You did?
But I just couldn't find that job, and a buddy of mine who I sang with in school, his dad was a special education teacher at Raytown High School, and just a brilliant teacher. His name's John Dollins. I think he's got to be getting ready to retire soon, hopefully for him. Get on out there and enjoy his life. But he contacted me and said, hey, we've got a special education social studies opening at Raytown. And I know that's not what you're looking for, but I think you would do a great job in there, and it would be an opportunity for you to get into a school district and find a place that's a great community, and I think you'll really enjoy it. One of my good friends from college also was teaching at Raytown at the time, one of my history friends from college, and I was like, oh, I could work there with him, and it would be a lot of fun. So I applied, and you know, I let the principal know. I was like, hey, I'm really looking for a social studies job, but you know, I want to teach, I want to work. And he said, I'll tell you what, if you take this job with me here in special education, give me 2 years in special education, I will give you the first social studies opening that we have.
Cool.
And I said, okay, that's a deal. I can do that. And he held true to his word. 2 years, one of our teachers left, and he moved me right into that spot without question. I basically went into his office and said, this is your interview, you're hired for social studies.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Sometimes those are the best interviews. Yeah.
It was great. But I have so much respect for this Dr. Brian Huff, who's now associate superintendent in Raytown. But he he stuck to his word, and he didn't jerk me around, and that happens a lot in, you know, the there's politics and bureaucracy and every different avenue of life, and for him to remain true to his word meant a lot to me. And I taught history then for the next 7 or 8 years there. And it was an amazing experience. Loved the community, the school, the kids, the administration. I couldn't say a single bad thing about that school district. It was just amazing.
So why'd you leave?
I got to a place where I was torn. I had started a private voice studio. Music has always been a passion of mine, going way back. I can't learn enough. I can't study it enough. I can't practice enough. It's something I never tire of. And so I started teaching voice lessons to kids at Raytown, and it was going very well. I got connected to the Culture House, you know, through a couple of different friends and through my wife, and started teaching voice lessons there in 2016. And
it's fun to watch your timeline, because I know Matt Richardson through all of these, and so I'm like, that is when you started.
Yeah.
It was about 2016.
Yeah.
Mindfuck.
But Alicia was doing a show with Kelsey Clark, now Kelsey Massey, at Okta. They're doing Dogfight together, and Culture House was looking for a music director for their summer production, and Alicia said I could music direct, and Kelsey gave my name to Amy Sander, and bang, bang, bang,
bang, bang,
I was there. Mm-hmm. So then they asked me to start teaching voice lessons there, and my studio started growing, and I got to a place where I had to sit down and think about how much time is in the day. I started giving up more and more responsibilities at Raytown to take on more voice students, because that's where I was finding happiness. Mm-hmm. And we had a son, Alicia and I had a son together in August of 2017. And it got to a point during the school year of 2017-2018 where I was putting him to bed on Sunday night and not seeing him again until Saturday morning. And that just wasn't cool. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would see my daughter for a little bit in the evenings when I'd get home from teaching voice or from a show or whatever, and I wasn't getting quality time at home. I was really getting burnt out, and I found myself wanting to invest more in the music than in my classroom, and I decided, one, that wasn't fair to the students anymore, and I wasn't, like, slighting my responsibilities or you know, my relationships with them weren't being negatively impacted, but I had to make a choice, and I had to sit down and think, what is the thing I can't live without right now? And it was my voice studio. I was really proud of the work that I was doing. I was proud of my students. I love being at the Culture House. I love the people there and the relationships that have been born through there, both as a music director and with colleagues. And that was the thing I couldn't give up. And I kind of weighed the pros and cons for a while and looked at, you know, what level of flexibility am I going to be afforded by being my own boss and having my own voice studio?
Do you like being your own boss?
It's glorious.
It's crazy,
I mean,
isn't it?
There's the tax crap. It kind of sucks. It's just a lot more of a headache, but being able to decide what my schedule is every day, and, you know, I don't, most days, except for summer camp, this has been insane, but I don't go into the studio until 2 or 3 o'clock most days. I get to spend all day at home with my family. My wife is also self-employed. I've gotten to be a much bigger part of my kids' lives and my wife. It's just,
I love that when people invest in themselves, and then it works out too.
Yeah.
You know, because you could have jumped off of the ledge and it could have all fallen apart and been horrible.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was a major, major leap of faith. At the time, my wife was also self-employed, you know, when I was still teaching. So it took me about 5 months from when I conceptualized it, when I was like, is this even a possibility, to pulling the trigger and going into my principal's office and deciding to resign, where I evaluated it from every angle. And is there going to be enough money? Are we going to be able to pay our bills? Is it still going to be able to allow Alicia to do her wedding and events company that she's built from the ground up and is really successful? And are we going to be okay? And I finally just had to make the choice. Like, yeah, it's going to be fine. Just got to trust it. And
well, you'll be okay no matter what.
Yeah.
You just sort of believe that
We'll figure it out. If I have to do something else, then I have to do something else. But and we haven't had to. It's been great. I'm doing what I'm doing, and Alicia's still doing what she's doing, and the kids have food, so
yeah. I mean,
we're okay.
It's insane. You know, I just while I sit here and I think about just like the different sort of avenues and projects that we've worked on together, plus one that we'll get to talk about that starts in about about 3 weeks, which I can't wait for. You know, I just like it's also sort of to, I guess, capitalize on the fact that whenever you work with people and then sort of like you trust them. I always talk about like that we do this. I did this huge show this past December called, you know, the Christmas at the Res, and the idea of that you, I believe, had played Joseph the year prior. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But the idea that a group of people who I'm all pretty comfortable with, you and Bogan, you know, and whatever, all of a sudden, like, I only had 2.5 maybe rehearsals with you if I combine every minute that I got together.
Yeah.
But you had played the role before. You had trusted Bogan. You trusted me. We all trusted each other. You got a brand new Mary, literally, like, opening night because Sarah, you know, drops out or because she's sick, and then Courtney Colville moves up, and no one knew the difference. No. And so I'm always just like, that's magic, and also, like, trusting your instincts.
Yeah, for sure.
And there is not a person in the world that I would have rather it been, you know, in that moment. Courtney's just such a professional.
I thought Courtney Coleman was incredible.
She was incredible.
Yes.
And just the sweetest person. And she was like, yeah, I'll do it. Just step right into it. No problem.
I just remember backstage being like, okay, I've got about 18 seconds to tell you everything I need to tell you, Courtney.
Yeah.
Matt, you can move her along, right?
Yeah.
Good. 5,000 people are showing up right now. Here we go.
Right, yeah.
Here we go. Goodbye.
We walked through everything backstage a couple times, and she's like, "Yeah, I think I got it. I think I got it." You know. And
all you have to do is hold the baby. Just hold the fucking kid.
Yeah. That was crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I said, Courtney's just such a professional and such a sweet person.
And recently engaged.
She
got engaged on the side of a mountain yesterday.
Michael.
That's fun.
Yeah.
And Michael is also a very dear friend. So I'm so happy for them.
Yeah. Every time I see those, it's always my first comment is always, consider this my RSVP. You know, I always say that because I'm like, that's a good wedding to go to.
Yeah.
I love. It's literally on my fucking shirt today. And evidently the word fuck is in my vocabulary today.
Always.
Yes,
it's a good
it
word.
Should.
It means so many meanings.
It does. It's one of the best. So, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be starting on a fun project together.
Oh, yes.
We did kind of a workshop intensive. For all of you, all of the listeners who don't know what we're speaking of, first of all, we're on the radio today with Matt Richardson. But earlier this year, we did an intensive workshop where we sort of just reviewed the music and talked about concepts of Jesus Christ Superstar that will be opening here on September 22nd of this year. Coming right up, and because we can't disclose who people are playing right now, you're just in it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And I remember hearing about your audition, and people being like, oh, who's this person? And I'm just like,
I know him.
Also, while knowing essentially that, like, you were pretty much cast that second, you know, that your audition was that great, and you came in, that we, it was seemingly unanimous that we all were like...
Because you came, what, like 15 minutes after?
I think he had just walked out of that damn room.
Yeah, I think we were, I was in the room.
I missed Jessica Alcorn's by like a second and
I
a half,
to walk out. I had no idea until, because I've been in an audition room before, but I was not nearly as in the community as I am now. And I knew every single person that was singing, basically. I mean, there were like a couple. And ironically, I think the couple that I didn't know are in the show now.
Yeah.
So thankfully, I'm like, yes, I get to know you now. Because Callie Rodina, like, where did she come from and why does she sing like a goddess? Like, like, was she open? And
she's cast on the Wailing. Just
oh
she
my,
can
well,
wail.
Oh, my
naturally.
Word. But no, her cast, her grandfather or grandmother, a family member passed away the morning of callbacks. And she also plays the trumpet. And so we were like, hey, it would be cool if maybe you can do a couple of those things. Would you mind bringing your trumpet in? Like, this was at the initial audition. And she came in and she was like, I really can't stay for callbacks. And she, you know, she explained what had happened. And she was like, but I wanted to make sure that you guys can hear my trumpet. And she stood up and did taps. And I was like, oh my God, get out of here.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're killing me right now.
Yeah.
Go, leave right now. She's incredible. But
yes.
I had no idea how emotional I would be when I saw people I knew and loved, like people that I really care about that are not like, I know you, but like, I know and love you. I was like, oh, I can't be in this room. Yeah. I have to get up here. You're making me weep right now. And that's not, I'm supposed to have a poker face. Yeah. That's supposed to be
I never have a poker face.
No, my God. Show. It was so much stress. Yeah. Thankfully, Natalie had a big bag of chocolate, but I just
kept but you were in there. Like, you earned every second of your place, you know, amongst that team, and I cannot wait.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. I know that you love Jesus Christ Superstar.
It's my favorite show.
It is, and it is something that I think even in our novice years together, we even talked about in some capacity about how much you loved it. I think, was it two summers ago you did that with Culture House, is that right?
Yeah, I music directed and accidentally played Caiaphas.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, like, you have, like, those moments where you hear and you talk about a show. Mm-hmm. And with Kyle, we've been talking about this show for at least 18 months in true form. Yeah. Where we're like, we are doing this.
But for, like, a decade before.
Yeah. Well, it's from when we opened the building.
Yep.
Yeah. That was the first conceptual idea that came into our building about 10 years ago, was that one day we will hopefully get to the place where we can put on Jesus Christ Superstar the way that we want to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now the baby's being born.
That's right.
Oh, it's being born.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, that has, yeah. It's,
like we're painting weird things just to make this baby come out. But yeah. But it starts like, I mean, it's in 21 days, I think people start showing up.
Yeah.
Yep. So.
I can't wait.
I can't wait either.
Well, and it is. I mean, I know that we've had on quite a few cast members, I think, at this point. Obviously, we've been talking about it for, about 18 months. That intensive, like, this group of people. I wept for the full solid, like, 2.5 hours.
But I will say, though, with this particular show, I think it does bring together a tribe feel.
Sure.
I think that, you know, there are those shows out there, The Hair, The Urinetown, those people who have those ensembles that just have to come together, and they play so quickly. So, Jesus Christ Superstar is built to allow for everyone to be in that room together, to love themselves. Oh, sure. But then, it felt like our cast, like, latched onto each other's ropes immediately. Yep. Like, you were just standing around singing and already interacting with each other and starting to form things. Mm-hmm. And,
well, and after and 3 days.
Yeah.
I mean, you expect that by the end of a run or even by the opening of a show.
Yes.
After some intense, you know, after you know, rehearsals and all of the things and hanging out and all that kind of stuff. But we had 3 days. And I 100%.
And some of you weren't even there for two of them.
Right.
Yeah, I was there for about 20 minutes, and then for the workshop.
Yeah.
Because I was doing a show that week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Idiot. the thing that I was just most blown away with at that sing-through, not only was the level of talent, like every time somebody opened their mouth, your head just snapped to see who was singing.
Yeah.
But just the genuine nature of every individual in that room, you know, to have that unbelievable gift and to not have it compromise who they are as a person. Everybody was just so warm and amazing.
And humble. All of you were so humble.
And praising each other. Yes. You know, there was not a single moment in there where anybody was like, oh, I'm so good for this. It was like, holy shit, you are amazing. And oh my God, you're amazing. I can't believe, like, we run into each other in the bathroom, like, oh, you're incredible. Like, no, you're incredible. Like,
right.
It was just such a cool experience to be in a room with that much freaking talent, and to have it sound how it did after 3.5 rehearsals or whatever.
And I said that I think that it charged, you know, although, because I love, you know, talking transparent and, like, you know, devil's advocacy, I think that it is weird that we did it and then we had so much time in between.
Yeah.
You know, like, there is truth, but that was really the only time that we could assemble most of those people.
Yeah.
And in some capacity, we didn't even have one of them yet. Devin, right?
Right, yeah.
Devin wasn't even there yet.
No.
Yeah. So there's one person who hasn't been in that room, you know, sort of yet at all. So then, like, you sort of start to really, like, look at how you all interacted with each other and, like, were already supporting one another and had never known one another. It was cool. So after 3 months, you know, you have these 3 months sort of in between. Some people thought, well, why would you waste that? You know, why would you waste that time and put so much time in between? And I think that it has somehow charged all of you to sort of remember what it's going to kind of be like. You know, like, in whenever you get cast in a show, you sometimes spend months kind of being like, what's the room going to be like? Or who's the people? Or what's it going to sound like? But you all sort of already have that in your head. So almost like that's, I think, why we all are so excited, because we have so, we know what we're going to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah.
We know that that's just standing and, you know, singing for, right. you know, 3 days. Imagine once we, like, spend yeah. time and develop and yeah. fill in the gaps.
Add all of that.
You know?
And pretty much everybody was off book for that, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's had 3-4 more months to bake. Everybody's still been practicing.
And a lot of people already
stuff.
Knew the show, too, as well. And
oh,
that
yeah.
also helps, is some people were able to walk in there and already start making character decisions.
Yes.
You know, it's not like a brand new piece.
Yeah, this is going to be... It's gonna be something else.
Mm-hmm. I just can't wait.
Me
yeah.
either.
So excited.
Oh gosh. And you know, I mean, in the office at the Arts Asylum, we talk about it. And literally after this meeting, we're having another meeting about
yeah.
it. You know, because it is, I don't know if a lot of people also realize what it is like to put up a show, you know, between
mm-hmm.
marketing and the casting and the contracts and just getting you all in one by one to do these affidavits, which you'll be getting an email about today.
Cool.
You know, but it's those things where there's a whole...
I just do that.
I know.
Yeah.
Why
are you here?
We'll handle it.
Yeah. But, you know, but it's those sort of conversations that I don't... I think that has been really fun side by side with Kyle to mm-hmm. sort of be building this, because I think Kyle often has had, like, a bigger company around him to sort of fill in some of those things. But Kyle is one half of this producing company.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he
yeah.
is this happy breed. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
he is also learning, and we are learning side by side, what it is like to put on this caliber of a show
yeah.
when no one else is filling in the gaps
yeah.
but us. And so it keeps us energized.
Yeah.
Daily.
Well, and him having to do it all
from LA.
LA.
Yeah.
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 Oh, man. I can't wait.
About
it. My heart is racing.
I know. Well, yeah, it's just cool. And we've accidentally had someone from the cast on, really, one
right.
at a time. So it's been kind of like a, oh, yeah, we're going to see you in September,
yeah.
Too. So what after Jesus Christ Superstar closes in October, what is next for you?
Oh, my. Well, I will probably be doing a show at the Culture House in the spring, one of the two kids shows. That's not official yet, but I'm not doing one this fall, so I'm assuming I'll be doing one in the spring. And then, you know, hopefully, God willing, depending what's the show next summer at the Culture House, I'll be a part of that in some capacity as well.
Do you know what that is?
We do not know yet.
Yeah.
No, Amy keeps that pretty close to the chest, and
mm-hmm.
we'll announce it sometime at the end of the year, is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always that limbo period when she decides what it is, and I have to think about whether or not, one, she's going to ask me to music direct, or if I want to be in it, if I want to audition, because the Culture House just puts on such wonderful shows and amazing venues, and the casts that assemble are incredible. And you know, last summer with Hunchback, which was one of the musical highlights of my life, was music directing that show. I was like, oh, but Frollo's in that show. Do I want to audition for Frollo? Like, oh man, I don't know. And
you still have time. You can play that role.
Yeah, I do that one for a while.
Yeah.
Patrick Page is like 60 whatever now.
Yeah, I was like, you
now he's
still...
Hades, so I just need to follow Patrick Page's trajectory.
I love
right.
that.
I
the first time I heard that, I was like, that's from that movie Hunchback. You know, like I was
yeah.
just like, holy shit, like his voice, Hades Town is great. I mean, it officially all dropped this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, for our
man.
Listeners, I got that notification, what was that, Friday morning, that
yeah.
the full album was...
I've been listening to that live album for... ever.
It is different.
Now to have a studio album is just insane.
It's different.
So good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's, you know, hopefully I'll be able to be a part of that in some capacity again next summer. But aside from that.
Maybe I'll throw you across the stage at Christmas at the Res.
Yeah,
story.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't
and
know.
Act two for the movie Nativity. I don't know if we've released what the theme is this
yeah.
year, but it is movies
oh.
throughout the thing. So
oh, cool.
I will be directing again this year. And Bogan and I have put together a really kind of fun idea of Christmas movies is all of Act One. You know, and
yeah.
then Act Two is from a movie actually called Nativity. And so we you know, it won't adjust too much, but it will be a little different.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that.
Cool.
We meet once a month, and then, like, all of a sudden, the
boom.
Show opens.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Will there be a donkey?
Simon will be back this year.
Okay. That was my kid's favorite part.
That's a lot of people's
not my foot's favorite part. No. I am so afraid that donkey's going to crush my
foot.
That
28 seconds with that donkey is very stressful.
Oh,
yeah, sure. I know, I'm sitting with you.
Yeah.
Because he goes wherever the hell he wants.
Oh, yes. Sure, yeah.
And you know, the caretakers kind of generally can lead him down there, but if he decides he wants to veer right down the aisle and push me into someone's lap, I'm in someone's lap. So.
Or this past year when we, you know, we've had Sarah ride that damn donkey for years, and this year we were like, Courtney Koval, jump on. You've never really ridden the donkey before.
Don't worry, I'll hold you.
I'll hold you. And you're pregnant. Don't forget.
Right. Yeah.
You're pregnant.
Yes. Yeah. Animals, working with animals is so much fun. We had, remember that time we did a fashion show one
in KC Live?
Yeah, at the puppies. Empower Might District, and it was like the Humane Society came, and so it was like all the dogs were adoptable, and they were supposed to be walking with the people, and they, you know, so we had one that was going down the runway and leapt off the runway into someone's lap. Happened to be Katie Van Lucien.
She's fun.
And I was like, thank God she likes dogs.
Yeah.
This is terrible. And it was like a raised runway, so it's not like he could just hop right back on. I was just like, leave the dog, just keep walking.
Go!
Yeah. Oh, animals.
Have you sang out at Kauffman Royal Stadium, the national anthem? Have you ever
I have sang there with my chorus.
Yeah, but never solo.
Never solo.
See, this is how I tangent. All of a sudden, something goes through my head, and I'm like, why haven't I ever heard you do the national anthem solo?
I would love to. I enjoy doing it with my chorus. It's a lot of fun. They usually give us one of the bigger games in the summer to go do that. Mm-hmm. So, I've never... You know, I don't pay attention to auditions and all that kind of stuff, so it's like, oh.
He's just used to people calling me.
Oh, shush. But it's like, that passed. Whoops, maybe next year, and then the same thing happens again.
I'm trying to go to a Royals game either this week or next week. I try to do one game a year, and I think tickets are pretty inexpensive right now.
Yeah. They've been winning recently.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But the train wreck of the first half of the season has kind of... It's rough.
It is. So yeah, my goal is to do that maybe Friday of this week.
Maybe
go to Worlds of Fun tomorrow night. They have their carnival.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I've seen some pictures.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Cool. It's really cool. Worlds of Fun used to kind of be a piece of crap, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
Like, and I would say I love amusement parks though. Like, I will ride a roller coaster anytime I can. And this last year. My husband and I decided, you know, because we went to the Winterfest, and we were like, well, this is so much fun. We had just, like, we were getting ready to go to Disney World. We were so, you know, jazzed up because we knew that Disney was going to be all dressed up. And so we were like, hey, two times coming to Worlds of Fun pays for a season pass.
Yeah.
Let's just do it this year. And I don't know if we've not gone, like, once a week.
Yeah, because you just drop it, right? Like, I'm just going
to... That gets off, like, 8 o'clock. The park closes at 10. We just drive there, ride two roller coasters, and go home.
Yeah. Worth it.
See, I get my steps in. You know, like, it's just totally worth it. But they have this thing, Carnival. And what it... Every year, I feel like Worlds of Fun is getting closer and closer to being, like, a reputable amusement park.
Yeah.
You know, you actually have entertainment that's of quality, and you have a reason to come there all year round. And the rides seem less, like, dull for some reason, because there's actually environment around you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And a lot of the old rides where you were risking injury are gone, so that's good.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But I always say, I'm not an official spokesperson of Worlds of Fun. Yeah. I just think that you should go, because they talk about how this carnival isn't necessarily bringing in new people. It is just getting people to stay in the park longer each day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many people are like, well, I've ridden all the rides now. I should just go home.
Yeah.
And so now they've got these shows and these parades, and I think that that's a really smart marketing tool for everyone, you know, and to... Because they haven't changed, like I said, the rides. They're just reinventing the environment around them, and that it's working. So maybe that's a hashtag for 2020 for me. Reinvent the environment around you.
Yeah.
I don't know. But if you get a chance, go out there. You know, it's fun. Did you catch Matilda?
I did.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, my word. What a phenomenal show.
Swayze did great.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
I had a lot of really dear friends in that show, and... Lana Jensen, who's the School of Theater Director at the Culture House, she was in the ensemble for that. She was the choreographer for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and then ended up being in Matilda, and her and I talked at length about it, and she's like, what I appreciate so much about doing that show at the park and with what Mark's vision was, is that that's the kind of show that has to be done a certain way, and it has to be done the way it's meant to be done, or it shouldn't be done kind of thing. And, you know, with that big stage and, you know, the amazing productions that the park can put on, and with what Mark's vision was for the show, she was like, I just feel like this show is being done the way it's supposed to be done.
They nailed it. It was
and
great.
And then the talent that they were able to assemble for that for that cast.
Francie was
Francie was incredible. Kara was incredible. And I feel like Kara is Miss Honey.
Kara is so good.
She's incredible.
Oh, yeah. That's the other show we worked on together. Fairly Modern Millie.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was fun.
If you like follow the shows that she's been in, all of the characters are so unbelievably different, yet she is amazing.
Yes.
That's just such a true.
She was really good in Crazy for You.
Yeah. She was really Polly in Crazy for You. Millie, she was Joe in Little Women with Me. She was Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. And now Miss Honey.
I doubt Julia Ewing is listening, but I know that she always wants to do Little Women, and I would like to figure out how to do that here with her.
Yeah.
So that's something I'd like to hunt her down for, because I love Little Women, to be honest.
Oh, me too.
Fortunate enough, hashtag was their opening night on Broadway of Little Women, because one of our college alums was one of the main producers for that, mm-hmm. and so it happened to just open when we were up there on spring break, and she got us all tickets to opening night of Little Women, and it was so good.
I bet.
I remember just sitting there, and I've been lucky enough to see Sutton Foster on Broadway like in three different roles, and I was just like, another time. Yeah, I was like, because I didn't know the music yet, like we didn't know anything, and I'm just discovering every minute of that show, and it's so good.
Yeah, I would love to do that show again.
I know you would.
I would love to.
Would you like to be in it or music direct it?
Yes.
But I do
not simultaneously. I've done that. That's not fun.
But those are those sort of projects that I, as I said, I'm already looking in 2021, and I'm like, I think that story could work here.
Yeah. So agreed.
I'd love to see that done here. Yeah. So Julie Ewing, I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
In 2021.
Little Women, 2021. Here we go.
Yeah. And then our friends just got back or finished Overture up in New York.
Oh, I'm so happy for them.
Yeah.
What an amazing experience they had, I'm sure.
And it is really cool when you think about the fact that just a year ago, they had debuted Act One in the French Festival here. Mm-hmm. Like, we are to the weekend date that they had just sort of shown the public this at all. And then they opened up the full production in September of last year, and now they have completed the New York Music Festival.
Yeah. It's a testament to the quality of that work.
Yes.
Because the rapid trajectory of that. I mean, think about the amount of workshops and how long it normally takes for a musical to go from concept to stage and to get recognition. Takes far longer than a year.
Yeah.
And I know that obviously it was their baby for a lot longer than a year.
Mm-hmm. But they're already working on their next one.
Yeah. What a phenomenal piece of art they produced.
I love the music.
It's incredible.
I mean, Krista and Barb wrote a fucking good show.
Nailed it. It is a gem.
It is.
For it to be entirely Kansas City grown and to be able to take that full cast out there and, you know, some of the musicians and Kevin and to be able to put that on in New York. What the hell? How amazing.
I think some of them, though, are kind of glad to maybe put this baby to bed for a little while.
I'm sure.
Because they have had to keep it in their heads.
Right.
Like any show that is sort of going through previews and workshops or whatever, but you all of a sudden realize that they've kind of been rehearsing for this show for 2 years. In some way. And then they still had to change it a little bit because the stuff that was up in New York they couldn't do what they had done here. Mm-hmm. So they were still adapting and changing that show all the way up until probably their final show on Saturday.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Knowing those people, and so I know for sure some of them I think are looking forward to just laying down and not having to work on Overture for a week. But I'm pretty sure also any of them would jump right back in it tomorrow if they could.
Mm-hmm. What an amazing.
I wanted to be up there, but it's probably best because I would have just been blubbering from the second row, you know, just like losing my mind. I was so proud of all of them.
Yes. So
jealous, almost, is the term. You know,
they all had to take off the Saturday morning of our second day of shows for Once on This Island, so I know a lot of them didn't get to see what we did at the Kauffman Center.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of funny. Blake Vigneri was my drummer, also the drummer for Overture for Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And Blake took a picture from we had a shack on stage is where the pit was. We weren't actually down in the pit, but we had a 10-foot off the ground shack.
Mm-hmm.
And Blake took a picture of his setup and posted it on Facebook. He's like, next project or whatever at the Kauffman Center. And Kevin responded to it like from the airport, and he was like, are you playing the whole run?
Yeah.
And Blake was like, what, you think I have something important to be doing right now?
But I love those interactions yeah. that take place. Yeah.
So he's like, don't worry.
I think you're supposed to be somewhere else yeah. tomorrow.
Don't worry, I'm getting on a plane at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning. Yeah. We're good.
Well, yeah, I mean, Brianna, who was in, who was your stage manager for Grand Hotel, right?
Yep.
She was up there and saw Overture. Yep. And then yesterday when I was here for the hangover for Fringe, she walked in and I was like, didn't I just see you that you were in New York like...
Yeah, you figured out teleportation.
...hours ago? And she was like, well, right, we posted the photo this morning, but we flew home yesterday.
Oh, tricky social media.
That's not allowed. You're supposed to do it as you're doing it. It didn't happen.
Or didn't happen. It's like working out, right? Yeah, did you really work out if you didn't tell everyone?
Yeah.
We also completed the 2019 Fringe Festival.
Yes.
Is finally finished in the Arts Asylum. We had 6 shows here. And our good friend Zach Faust's Gleesicle took Best of Venue and did one more show yesterday and had a great turnout.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that. Do we know if he was ranked in the top Fringe shows?
I haven't seen that list yet, but it was a lot of fun. You know, Faust is a crazy character, you know, in so many ways, but sometimes...
Theatrical visionary.
Yeah, he is definitely involved in... He has his hands all over, but sometimes when he's allowed to just sort of dork out, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I could see so much of him just having fun. And he wasn't even in this,
yeah.
this version. But I saw a lot of his excitement and personality kind of come through on a piece that we all kind of know. Like, we know
yeah.
me. So all he sort of had to do was curate some of those characters and add in his finesse. But from year to year to year, like, that's kind of what Kristen Barr did last year. They kind of just, I mean, it was their musical, and then they added their own little finesse, and it was special. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
the Fringe Festival really, it's hard. I don't know if you've ever done the Fringe Festival
yeah.
in that, but yeah.
This is the first year I have not been, I didn't make it to a single show.
Did you do the one at the Heartland like 4 years ago?
I've done 2 Fringe shows. I was in Sing Sing Sing
at
the
Heartland.
Yeah. Yeah, that cast was... insane. What a talented group of folks. But it was an all a cappella review.
Anthony Edwards sort of curated that, right?
Yeah, he
yes.
He and his name is escaping my mind. He's done like one man show and a bunch of acting stuff. I haven't talked to him in a while. But yeah, Anthony Edwards kind of music directed that for the first couple weeks. But it was myself and Teal Holiday and James Levy and my wife. And Lena Andrews and Michael Gollier and just an amazing
it was so good.
Group.
Yeah.
And it was the hardest crap we've ever done ever because it was 16 a cappella songs.
Yeah. And all you had was like boxes and like stands.
And a week of rehearsals. And I think it was a little bit more of an undertaking than any of us thought
it
was going to be.
It's always like us.
Originally it was like script in hand, blah, blah, blah. And then it was like, no, this is all memorized. And it's, you know, we're going to do it in 10 rehearsals.
That was the last time I was in the Heartland.
Yeah, me too.
Was that, yeah.
And then the next year, I did an original show called "Taking Care of Mom," that was at the JOB, and that's a show that I've been living with for several years now too. It was written by Jack Phillips, and I did that version of it. And then we did a recording so that he could submit it to a bunch of festivals and stuff
yeah.
and workshops, and then. We did he made a bunch of changes to it, and then we did a reading of it at Rockhurst, and then we did more recording, and now he's doing more things, and he wants to do another reading of it this October. So it's been like
four years.
Yeah. I'm the only person that's ever played the character, Ted, in the show, who has to make the decision whether or not he's going to help his mom commit suicide or not. It's kind of dark, but it's got some dark...
It's a good conversation, though.
Yeah, it's got some dark comedy in it, too. Mom is like... I want to off myself. This is it, you know? And he's like, no, you can't do that. And, you know, just kind of discovering how selfish it is to keep her around and all that. And,
do you believe in that?
It's tough.
It
oh,
is.
Oh man.
I think it is the biggest pro-choice conversation that you can also have as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's
yeah.
the other side of the,
there's,
of the spectrum of that.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot to be said with, you know, your own autonomy as a person and making your own decisions for your life and who you are. And I'm also a person of faith. So there's the question of, you know, is it or is it not suicide, and are they in right mind? And it is tricky. There's a lot of tenets of sacred cows, if you will, of faith and quote unquote what is Christian and what is not, that I don't necessarily fall in line with. And, you know, many of my beliefs aren't necessarily traditional, but
you do. I mean, I have appreciated having you as a friend for like the last, you know, 8 or 9 years, because I think that we've had some really intelligent conversations about sure. different sides of the exact same line of what Christianity and things like that
yeah.
are. So yeah. I definitely am glad that I've kept you around, you know, in some ways to have those more insane conversations.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's hard right now when there's so much just ugliness mm-hmm. in the world and in the name of something and it's not what I believe, you mm-hmm. know, and nobody that I'm friends with thinks that way, you know, and we all go to church together and we pray mm-hmm. together but we don't think these ugly things, mm-hmm. you know, we don't believe it. So every time somebody, I'm not one that steps in and says, not all Christians, rah. It's like, no.
But you feel that way. You do want to raise your hand sometimes, right? Yeah, and say, not me.
I do, but I think it's more important. What I try and do is just, live out my beliefs.
Sure.
And show people who I am through how I love and how I care for each other and how I communicate with people and treat people with respect and dignity and have integrity as a person. And I hope that speaks for itself enough and that I don't have to stand up and say, well, I'm a Christian too. Hopefully it's just that you see me and you respect me for who I am and, you know, understand that that's a part of who I am.
I mean, the word respect, I think, is the more yeah. important part of that, because I've also seen you disagree with someone and not be rude about it. I've literally seen you written in reform say, I disagree, but hey, I'll see you Saturday. Yeah. You know, almost. Like, just to be like, well, this is not what's going to divide us and never make us talk to each other again. And maybe one day we can have a conversation about it in different ways. I just know that I believe many a times I have private message you on the side to be like, boop, 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 boop. Yeah. And I still would love to get the group started that I tried to about a year or so ago, where people can come together and have informative conversations with the guise of knowing that at the end you all do sort of have to shake hands and say, this was just a good conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
I think so often just having difficult conversations in person does that on its own.
Get rid of the veil.
Exactly.
Just, we had an instance in St. Louis this past March where we had two people in a room, and one of them was talking about essentially how African Americans are not targeted in some ways by police. but really,
he didn't believe it. Like, I don't think
he's just like
real.
I don't think it's real. I don't see it. And I know, and trust me, we had a black person in the room with
right.
us talking about it, and all four of us though were so respectful of that conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And he woke up the next morning with like a complete,
and he was
thank
like,
you for not
thank
treating
you.
Me like a racist.
Yeah.
And I was like,
he was like, just talk to me about
right.
it.
Yeah.
And that was just another example where I was like, it is important sometimes to say, you might be saying something racist, but I don't think you mean to be racist.
Right.
Let's just have a conversation.
Find out if it's there or not.
Because at the end,
it's
nowhere. You might still be a racist by the end. But what if you're just like, oh my God, I've never actually seen in real life a person of color being mistreated. You know, like, and it, in his bubble, he didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, because he was lucky enough to have people of color completely respected.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he was like, what, I keep hearing these stories of this negativeness, mm-hmm. but I'm not seeing it. And it's a little bit like our conversation in some ways about Donald Trump, where we're just like, he hasn't actually affected my life from day to day. As much as like that sort of pisses mm-hmm. me off that he, you know, that he doesn't actually affect my Corey Child's day to day, does not mean that he is not affecting all sorts of people around me, and mm-hmm. that I don't dislike him because he is affecting, but he hasn't changed my day to day at all.
Yeah, me either. Aside from just
the gross
social media vitriol.
Yeah, but just the grossness that's just around us.
Yeah, 100%.
It's crazy. So in our last 10 minutes, we do the question and answer section.
Sweet.
If you are tuning in, as we said, we are talking with our good friend Matt Richardson today on Couch Chat. This has been a really quick interview. I can't believe we're already down to our last 10 minutes. Whoo, shit.
Started.
Huh?
It feels like it just started.
I know. And it used to be when we started the show, Courtney and I talked for the first half hour and only brought the guest on for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shocking how, short
that
was.
We had to cut that really quickly. Because we could always record with somebody first and then we'd do our part later so that we, you know, we could, but yeah. Then we realized, and I was like, our episodes are going to be 2 hours long.
Yeah.
We just, Courtney and I often have a lot to say too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your show? Mm-hmm.
You're on too.
It literally, there is a sign behind us, surprising or not. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Miss Perry.
Let's see here. What's the closest thing to real magic?
Oh, the closest thing to real magic. The thing that popped into my head immediately was childbirth. Being in the room when my son was born was the most awe-inspiring moment of my life, for sure. Like, how my wife did that, for one, and how he was nurtured inside with science and, you know, it's just, yeah, that... It truly is. When people say the miracle of childbirth, it truly is that that's all magic.
It's insane.
It's magical.
It is. I think it's magical and it doesn't happen. But, you know, our little friend Isabel, who's just in the other room, is like, I'm like, I knew you when you were just boop. Yeah. Like the egg and the sperm had just come together.
And now you're a person with attitude and talking. And
yep. Well, you've taught me things.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, it's beyond that. You have somehow surpassed my ability to be your teacher. You are also now my teacher.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, huh.
Yeah, my kids teach me every day.
And she's cute as shit. She takes a really good, Instagram photo. So, like, you know, it just blows my mind.
Pretty hot. This is how you use this filter.
It is great. Thanks.
Great for my selfie game. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we went to a selfie place this past weekend at Oak Park Mall, just downstairs from the Culture House or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Wonder Wonder. And it is literally...
It's pretty cool. I judge people for hardcore for doing that, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'll have to go check it out.
It's like 15 rooms. It's about, $10 or $15 or something a person.
Yeah.
I mean, and it is just Instagram selfie booth another.
Kids there.
Cool.
That's smart.
It's really
cool. Yeah.
And there's like a confetti room and like all sorts of things you just get these extraordinary photos with your family and you get your own alone time. So what is something that you were told you could never do or do well that you have accomplished or in the process of?
Ooh, these are loaded questions. Oh, man. You know, nothing is coming to mind. So I guess that means maybe I've just been blessed with good people around me.
Mm-hmm.
I've always had people that supported and encouraged everything I've ever wanted to
do. That's incredible.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just really freaking lucky in that regard. You know, aside from just like people being idiots in high school, like, oh, you suck, you're not gonna, I'm like, nah, I don't care what you have to say.
Yep.
But I think that, when I make a decision to do something, it's usually as a result of a lot of thought and care, and I will incorporate the opinions of people I care about in making those decisions, so nobody's really surprised, like, oh, that's a stupid decision, you're never going to be able to do that. I'm sure some people thought that when I said, I'm quitting teaching and changing my career path at the age of 35, and I'm going to open a voice studio. I'm sure there were some people that behind my back were like, that's never going to work out, he's going to starve his family.
Yeah.
Ha, I got you, bitches.
Well, I mean, there is definitely that vindictive inside of me sometimes that wants to be like, you told me I could never do this, huh?
Yeah.
Now what, motherfucker? And I don't do it to prove them wrong. It is just nice sometimes when I'm like, maybe the next time you should be kinder. But I've also had the devil's advocate question or a conversation about, we need those people sometimes to tell us no.
Yeah,
because
sure.
Gives us focus and drive.
Yeah, it makes me be like, well, can I do that? No, I will do that.
I will. Yeah.
I will. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess I'm lucky. I can't think of a moment in my life where somebody told me that I was never going to be able to do it.
Well, then you've surrounded yourself with a really positive bubble.
Or I have a really short memory.
That might be the title of this episode.
Yeah.
I might be really lucky, or I have a short-term memory.
Yeah.
All right, here's one that's not so loaded. You are a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why?
So it has to be do I have to come up with the name of the color? It can be a color that already exists?
Yeah, you can
do
either.
You could be a color that already exists, and you could rename it that applies to you.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could make up some fantastical color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it was a little loaded.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
I'm probably just taking this way too deep. No. Now, my favorite color in the crayon box is always cerulean. It's that blue. It's not royal blue. It's not navy blue. It's got a little bit of aqua in it.
I love cerulean.
Yeah, blue is my color, and I think that is me, in that it's got a level of brightness that isn't there with a lot of the shades of blue. So I feel like there are aspects of me that are bright and extroverted, but at the same time I'm pretty mellow. Mm-hmm. And I can be a wallflower and just kind of chill back and observe. The cerulean, that was the first thing that popped in my head.
Mm-hmm. It's a good color, especially for a heterosexual.
Yeah.
Like, it's a good color. What is the best piece of advice you've been given or you've given yourself?
One that's always stuck with me, and I honestly can't remember who said it to me. And I've seen it in so many places since, and I think that's why it's clouded. But it's none of your business what other people think about you. And when I got to that place in like when I was like 25 or 26, where I just stopped trying to please everyone else so much and stopped worrying about what other people thought about what I was doing or the decisions I was making, and just focused on, I'm going to be a good person. I'm going to try and be a good person, and I'm going to treat people with respect. And if you don't like me, then that's okay. But I don't need to know what you think about me. I'm not doing these things for your approval. I'm doing them because they make me happy. And I'm going to foster the relationships that I care about. And hopefully more wonderful relationships come from that. But yeah. It's none of my business what other people think about me. Uh-huh. And it's a very freeing concept when you can get to a place where you truly embody it. It took a long time to get there. Like, I started telling myself that, and then you still get paralyzed with, like, oh, well, sure. What's that person saying about me? Mm-hmm. And now when you're mid-30s, I feel like is when I'm finally to a place where I am who I'm going to be for the most part. I mean, I know 40s, everybody says 40s is a big change.
You know what that's like, right, Courtney?
We'll see.
But not yet. See, who I am at 35 is definitely not who I was at 25.
Right.
So I've just gotten to a place now where I'm happy with my life and who I am and what I'm doing, and I don't really care if somebody else doesn't
having
like that.
Having kids helps that too.
Having kids, when you start living for somebody else a little bit, that changes things too.
Yeah.
Your whole perspective on the world changes.
Yep.
I take like a, you know, sort of internal temperature every once in a while just to make sure that I like what I'm doing and who
yes.
I am. And there are some
yes.
external variables that make me be like, well, I've sort of consistently heard this sort of thing maybe about me. Is that something I like about myself, or is that something I don't?
Sure.
So that's about really the only time that I let the, you know, John Q. Public in.
Yeah.
In my self-assessment.
For
sure.
Whenever I'm just
we
like,
all
okay.
Have, we all have our circles, you know, and there are people whose opinions do matter to me,
mm-hmm.
and people who I respect and who I have relationships with, that if I'm being an asshole, I want them to tell me that I'm being an asshole, and I trust that they would.
Yeah.
It's
believing that people have my best interests.
Exactly.
You know, if
they
are giving me criticism, it is because they think I could be better or I'm not paying attention.
Yeah.
It's
not... Exactly.
They're not just doing it to tear me down, which I think a lot of people get their strength in making people smaller than them.
Exactly.
And I'm not... I would rather sit in the same boat and all paddle together.
Exactly.
You know? Because
then
eventually I might not have to paddle.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just hold the umbrella. You know, or something. Well, that was our hour.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
So fast.
We always end with two questions. One, is there anything that you didn't get a chance to say on the show today that you would like to say? Words of wisdom, sort of finishing thoughts?
I'll just say I am so thankful to be a part of this arts community. It's changed my life completely in every respect from top to bottom. I have my family because of this community. I have my job because of this community. I've made incredible friendships and professional and personal relationships because of this community. My entire life revolves around making amazing art with people, both musical and theatrical.
I get to do that too.
It's
really cool.
There's nothing better.
Yeah.
And to sit back every once in a while and just take inventory of that, I'm like, man, What an unbelievable blessing to do this with such amazingly talented people on a daily basis. I'm so thankful that we have this arts community that we do, and that the people in it are equally as amazing. You know, there's assholes everywhere, but as a whole, you know, the group of people that follow all of our shows around, and you know, the both professional and community, are just freaking amazing people. And it is so much fun to do life with all of them. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm thankful. That's all I got.
We're thankful to have you too, for real.
Thanks for having me here.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is kind of cool every morning to wake up and be like, I get to go do this.
Yeah.
Like, there really are people out there who don't.
Yeah.
And they can't figure out why. Maybe it's because they can't take the leap. Maybe, you know, who knows what that is. But I am, whether it's just my only child talking or not, I've never liked being told what to do.
Yeah.
And so somewhere in that, I surrounded myself with people who allowed me to be myself, but also sort of kept, you know, watch over me to make sure I wasn't too crazy, you know, or stupid. But it's really kind of cool that I do get to work in the arts every day.
Yeah.
And then at any given moment, I have someone like you sitting on the couch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was the purpose why this show started, is that people were like, well, I don't know who Matt Richardson is.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you know everything about him and I don't? And it can't always just be situational. It can't be, well, we were in a show together, so we just got to know each other. Because other people deserve to know your story who aren't, you know, in shows with you.
Yeah.
And so now maybe someone will see you out in the world and feel like they can approach you or talk to you because they know a little anecdote about you.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Come say hi.
Speaking of that, last question is, who would you love to hear from on the couch? Who should we have on that would make you listen and maybe tune in to learn something about? Besides your wife. She's on my short list. I've got her on my short list.
You know who would be a great person to talk to, who every time I talk to him, it turns into a 40-minute conversation? Jeremiah Anna.
Okay.
Jeremiah Anna is the founder and the owner of the Culture House. Mm-hmm. Obviously plays a large role in the Kansas City arts community, not only with, you know, having the conservatory, but also with Underground at the Kauffman Center, and then the outreach that's been happening in the inner city as a result of the show Underground. Mm-hmm. That dude has a lot of life experience and a pretty brilliant outlook. And it's a person that I think everybody would love to hear from for an hour.
Okay.
He's brilliant.
We're coming for you, Jeremiah. Get ready.
That's right.
Well, yeah, this was this week's Couch Chats.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the show, my friend. And next time that you hear from Matt Richardson, he will be standing on our stage.
Yes.
Singing his ass out in Dude's My Superstar.
I will.
Whoo, shit. Right. Look how deep that voice is, everyone. Holy moly. All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.